April 1st, how about that? Gotta have something for April Fool's Day.
We have.
I thought it was your stack of bills, Mr. Chair. Oh, I made a mistake? Wasn't so?
No. Yeah, they're all for real, I'm afraid. Okay, the first thing we're going to do this morning is open a public hearing on HCR 11. Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Representative Jerry Crummell, House District 26. Good morning to you and to the members. And, you know, I wish I could come up with a good April Fool's prank for you, but I haven't been able to so far. So I'll just go ahead and talk about the resolution that's before you. House Concurrent Resolution 11 is in memory of Bob Coons. And Bob was a constituent of mine, and he was also a friend of mine, and he was an advocate for victims' rights in every sense of the word. He meant a lot more than just being a victims' rights advocate and a constituent. You see, 44 years ago or so, I used to walk Bob's daughter, Valerie, to school in Walla Walla, Washington. And I was about 8, and she was, 6 or 7. And, you know, it's funny how life turns out, because then 40 years later, Bob would be walking with me through the halls of the Oregon State Capitol. Kind of an interesting turn of events. And his wife, Dee Dee, and Bob founded Crime Victims United. And it was because their daughter, Valerie, this little girl that I wrestled with in the front yard and walked to school with, was brutally murdered in the San Francisco area. And it was just last August that her body was actually found, and it was found in northern Washington. And but because of her disappearance and her apparent murder, and the fact that the family could not get any kind of information on Valerie and or on the case, and it seemed to lead a lot of dead ends, that they, about 20 plus years ago, founded Crime Victims United. And the other night, Dee Dee surprised me. She still lives in my district, and she surprised me by showing up at a town hall that I was having in Wilsonville. And I was tempted to tell her about this, but we've managed to keep this a secret so far from her. And she's going to be coming down on April 11th, which is Crime Victims Day at the Capitol. And I hope that you'll help me keep the secret, because what we would like to do is, and we're working with the Chief Clerk's Office and the Speaker's Office to, if we can get this bill out of committee, to have it as a special order of business on April 11th for Crime Victims Awareness Day. And let me just talk a little, just for a moment, about Bob himself. Bob was many things. He was a crime fighter. He went to Oregon State University. He got a degree in agriculture. He was a grain broker and sold storm windows. And he had a variety. He had quite a life, and actually played minor league baseball as well. Matter of fact, Bob taught me how to pitch. I wouldn't say that my inability as a pitcher was necessarily because of his poor teaching, but probably because I have little or no athletic ability. But Bob was also a gentle giant, and not just in his height, but a giant in terms of his compassion. He had a great Irish laugh, and he loved life, and he lived it to the fullest. I'm proud to have known Bob, and I'm proud to have Dee Dee as a friend. I'm proud to have the entire Coons family as friends, and that's why I sponsored this. And it is also sponsored by the Speaker and the Senate President, and 83 of our colleagues, of which I believe all of you are co-sponsors on this bill. So with that Mr. Chair, I will stop, and I'd be glad to answer any questions, but I hope that you will pass this bill out unanimously, and we'll get it to the floor on April 11th, and we can honor Bob in a most appropriate way.
Thank you, Representative Crummell. Any questions or comments from the committee members?
Representative Barker. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, knew Bob for a number of years, and I remember when he was working on the crime victims, he came to me and said, I have a petition. We're getting these petitions all over the state. He and his wife did yeoman's work as an understatement of getting these laws passed. They did it without real financial backing and just by a lot of hard work. But I remember he gave me a petition, said, would you get that filled out? And I got that one filled out and helped in that cause. And I've known both of them for years. And they've also helped with the parents of murdered children. People, I have a friend who lost a daughter to a brutal murder, and they help comfort her through that, some of that. So this is a great thing to recognize Bob Kuhn.
Any further questions, comments? Thank you very much, Carl. Is it Steve Doerr?
Doyle.
I can't read it on
Dole.
Here.
Steve Dole.
Dole. All right. There we know who we're talking about. We know who's there now, don't we?
That's a result of my poor penmanship.
Steve's easy, it's the other part's not.
That's right. Just remember pineapple and you'll always get it right. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Dole and I'm the current president of Crime Victims United. I want to take this opportunity to thank you all, Mr. Chairman, and the committee for hearing HCR 11. I know we have important things to do here in the Capitol and in the rush of our everyday business. While there's a lot of things going on, I think it is important to take time to recognize people in our state, politicians and individual citizens who were statesmen in their individual and respective lives. And that's what this bill does. As I also want to thank Representative Crummell for sponsoring this bill and all the hard work that his legislative aide, Don Phillips, did in this bill, and also to President Courtney and to Speaker Minnis and all the others that signed on to the bill. Bob was a mentor to me. He was also like a brother that I never had. A father figure, but most of all, he was a good friend. And as you all know, good friends are a hard commodity to come by in today's modern world. The same tragic circumstances brought us together, the murders of our only daughters, Bob's Valerie in 1980 and my Lisa in 1992. There's a lot of ironies in life, as Representative Crummell mentioned, with his relationship with the Coons. Ironically, the same year that Bob and Dee Dee were dealing with the death, the murder, and disappearance of their daughter, my daughter was being born. The same year, 1992, that my daughter was murdered, was when Bob first learned he was diagnosed with cancer. Representative Crummell, Jerry, mentioned that Bob was in the grain business. My former father-in-law was in the grain business, and that's how we got in contact with Bob and Dee Dee Coons, and that's how they showed up at the first hearings when the murder of my daughter was apprehended. Bob set the values for Crime Victims Movement and was one of the founders of Crime Victims United. Bob died in April 2004 after his long battle with cancer. It was a brave battle. And he did not lose his sense of dignity, nor did he lose his sense of humor right up to the end. I was able to visit with him, in fact, a few short weeks before he passed on. And I saw that sense of humor and that will to live. Bob, along with his wife, Dee Dee, joined the Portland chapter of Parents of Murdered Children in 1980 after their daughter, Valerie McDonald, was abducted in California and San Francisco while she was at the University of San Francisco and never heard from her again. Her remains were identified in 2002 on the border of the Washington and Canada in a creek bed. that was discovered by hunters and then recovered by the sheriff's office. Through their involvement in parents of murdered children, they became aware of the horrible state of the criminal justice system in Oregon at that time. Victims of violent crime routinely receive no respect and often little justice from the criminal justice system, a system which failed miserably at holding criminals accountable and protecting decent citizens. Bob and Dee Dee, along with other members of Parents of Murdered Children, created Crime Victims United in 1983 to work for crime victims' rights and a more balanced criminal justice system. For the next 14 years, Bob was a leader of the group, serving as president and in other capacities. Even after retiring in 1997, Bob was an invaluable advisor to the group. In 1984, Bob led the effort to get a victims' rights measure on the ballot. Measure 8 was narrowly defeated. In 1986, another measure, Measure 10, was advanced and passed, putting victims' rights into Oregon law. Both times, CVU members personally gathered tens of thousands of signatures to bring the measures to the voters. In 1994, Bob was instrumental in Measures 10, 11, and 17 and worked hard on that campaign. And in 1996, Bob was the main author of Measure 26, which recast the founding principles of criminal justice in Oregon as protection of society, personal responsibility, accountability for one's actions, and reformation. Measure 26, the culmination of 12 years of effort, passed handily and has had a profound effect as Article 1, Section 15 of our Oregon Constitution, and I believe is Bob's long-lasting legacy to this state. Bob was involved in many other ballot measures, including the 1996 and 1999 measures that put victims' rights into the Oregon Constitution. The necessity of putting these rights in the Constitution became clear after criminal defense attorneys used the courts to nullify the voters' will expressed in Measure 10, the statutory crime victims' bill. Bob, working in close partnership with his wife, Dee Dee, personally helped hundreds of crime victims of violent crime navigate the choppy waters of the criminal justice system at a time when survivors were reeling from the most devastating loss. He brought expertise, wisdom, and comfort. Using his vast experience, his sound moral compass, and penetrating intellect, Bob made a huge contribution toward the mission of Crime Victims United to create a more balanced criminal justice system, one in which the interests of victims and law-abiding citizens were accorded due weight. He advanced this mission through testimony before the Oregon legislature, by working with virtually every criminal justice agency in the state government, by participation in ballot measure campaigns, and through appearances in the media. He was an eloquent spokesman and a compelling advocate. We believe that no one has made a greater contribution to the state of Oregon's crime victims and criminal justice system than Bob Kunz. His selfless and tireless work for the benefit of all law-abiding Oregonians was an inspiration. We all loved him, and we'll sorely miss him. Again, I thank you very much for your indulgence and for your time, and we hope that you will unanimously send this bill to the floor on April 11th, which is Crime Victims Week, and we'll also keep our fingers crossed that we can make this a surprise to his wife, Dee Dee. And I'll take any questions.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Any questions, comments? Thank you very much.
Thanks.
We'll close the public hearing on HCR 11, open a work session on HCR 11. Motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move HCR 11 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Flores has moved HCR 11 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'm not even going to have a vote, so ordered. Representative Crummell, you'll carry. Thank you. Open a work session on House Bill 2139.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2139 is here before us because of the Department of Corrections. They are wanting to exempt unclaimed or abandoned property of Department of Correction inmates from the Uniform Disposition of Unclaimed Property Act. It authorizes the department to determine and direct disposition of tangible property only, and it declares an emergency. We heard testimony in the subcommittee that what often happens is inmates will leave behind things like socks, clothing, television sets, and that some of these have some value, but most have little or no value. The Department of Corrections is required to inventory all of these items and currently required to hold on to them for a period of 2 years. This bill would give them a little more flexibility to dispose of these types of items that are of limited value, and it will reduce storage and labor costs. Clothing, in particular, could be donated to charitable organizations if it is still in good enough shape. And it is here before you do pass as amended unanimously from the criminal subcommittee.
Okay, need a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2139A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
As amended?
Yes, as amended.
All right. Representative McPherson moves House Bill 2139 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any comments, objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Worth? Mr. Chair?
Aye. House Bill, excuse me.
I'm asking about Representative
Worth. Oh, she's not here. Excuse me. Go ahead. She's not excused. She didn't contact anyone.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. Okay, House Bill 2139, as amended, moves the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Who was the carrier in the...
I was in the sun.
Okay, want to carry on the floor?
Sure.
You'll be fine. Okay, open a work session on House Bill 2140.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2140, as amended, would give Health Professional Regulatory Boards discretion to investigate an inmate complaint if the inmate has not yet exhausted the internal administrative remedies of the Department of Corrections. Professional regulatory boards cannot order specific treatment. The only thing that would happen if a professional regulatory board were involved in investigating a healthcare professional would be the practitioner's license. There is no time limitation on when an inmate can file with a regulatory board, and this has no effect on an inmate's civil claims. I did receive a phone call and do want to put into the record that the Department of Corrections is going to change a few of its internal policies. One of the Department of Corrections' internal policies that is going to expressly be changed is that if the Department of Corrections fails to respond within the timelines they have set up, then it will be considered an exhaustion of remedies as to the inmate. Additionally, as far as this particular bill is concerned, 2140, if an inmate decides to go to the professional regulatory board first without exhausting administrative remedies, and if that claim is rejected by the regulatory board, the Department of Corrections will begin tolling a 30-day internal grievance process on the day of the rejection so that an inmate may still attempt to address his or her issues. This came from the criminal subcommittee with a recommendation to do pass as amended, and it was unanimous.
Okay, thank you. Have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2140A to the floor to do pass.
Representative Barker has moved House Bill 2140A as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Questions, objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Worth, absent. Vice Chairman McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. House Bill 2140 as amended moves to the floor with a due pass. And Representative Barker, I think you're the carrier, please.
Yes.
Open a work session on House Bill 2143.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2143 comes to us from the Subcommittee on Criminal Law with a due pass as amended recommendation. That recommendation is unanimous. This measure would require that an inmate in the custody of the Department of Corrections would have to exhaust all internal remedies and file all necessary grievances prior to filing a claim in Oregon's small claims court. Additionally, it would limit the inmate's loss to the value of the property lost or damaged. Again, for the record, I would just note that the Department of Corrections is going to expressly change within their internal policies that an exhaustion of remedies would occur if the Department of Corrections failed to respond within the timelines they have already set up internally.
I just for the record, I may have missed it. The dash ones were adopted in the sub?
Yes, they were.
Okay. Need a motion on the bill, please?
Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2143 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Representative
Thatcher.
Yes. Has moved House Bill 2143 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Any comments?
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to put on the record to reiterate what counsel just reported, which is that we heard assurances from the Department of Corrections that they would regard any failure to respond within the timelines that are set in their internal grievance procedure, even if those are not set as firm deadlines within the procedure, as being sufficient to establish an exhaustion of administrative remedies. So it's just affirming what staff said, but I wanted to say that here as a member so that we make sure it's part of the legislative history.
Part of the record. Okay, thank you. Anything further? Yeah. Call the roll, please.
Representative Barker. Aye. Representative Flores. Aye. Representative Gerard. Aye. Representative Thatcher. Aye. Representative Wirtz. Aye. Vice Chairman Person. Aye. Vice Chair Olson. Aye. Chair Krieger. Aye. House Bill 2143 as amended moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Representative Thatcher, can you carry please?
Open a work session on House Bill 2312.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2312 comes to you from the Criminal Subcommittee with a due pass as amended recommendation. The Dash 1 amendments were adopted on March 29, 2005. House Bill 2312 would extend the sunset provision, which is set to go into effect in July of this year. It would extend it for another 4 years and enable persons who went to trial and contested their guilt on certain felonies to file what is known as an affidavit of innocence and request retesting of DNA evidence. It should be noted for the record that in the 4 years this law has been on the books, nobody has utilized it. Nobody has filed an affidavit of innocence, but we want to continue to allow persons to have the opportunity to do so.
Okay, thank you. Have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I do have one small question, just by way of information. Now, noticing that originally the bill had requested the elimination, and this now just extends the date. So, and that was to, for the benefit of what?
Let me look at, why did we do that? I think that, oh, I know exactly what the concern was. There are two primary concerns. The first concern expressed was evidence retention. Although this statute does not expressly require law enforcement agencies to retain evidence, there is a concern that it is extremely costly for law enforcement agencies to hold on to evidence for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And so this gives law enforcement agencies at least some guidance that we're probably only going to keep this on the books another 4 years. Additionally, one thing that we heard at subcommittee was a concern about victims, that victims learning that a person who victimized them wants or was at least convicted of victimizing them, was asserting their innocence and everything was going to be reopened, would potentially re-victimize a crime victim.
Okay. Any other discussion on the bill? Have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2312 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
That had an amendment too, didn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
House Bill 2312 is moved by Representative Thatcher to the floor with a due pass as amended. Any other comments? Objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Farrar?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Ward?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye.
House Bill 2312 moves to the floor as amended with a due pass. And Representative Thatcher, do you want to carry, please?
Sure.
Heidi, have you got a minute?
I do.
Work session on House Bill 2654.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2654 would include in the felony DUII statute, well, let me actually start off by giving you a little background. An individual who is a first-time DUII offender who has not hurt anybody in the course of committing the crime of DUII is eligible for a program called Diversion. Diversion is a program by which the person enters a plea, they enter the diversion program, they go through treatment, and at the conclusion of treatment, if they complete it in within a year to 18 months, there's a provision for an extension, then the person can get their DUII conviction dismissed. A person is eligible for diversion every 10 years. Additionally, there is a statute on the books that elevates driving under the influence of intoxicants to a felony when a person has three prior convictions for DUII in a 10-year period. What this bill would do is count a diversion as a conviction if the person is now arrested for the fourth time in 10 years for DUII and allow the prosecutors to charge felony driving under the influence of intoxicants. This bill, we have heard from Legislative Fiscal, I don't have a statement, but Legislative Fiscal is of the opinion that the impact is so high that it will require a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and we have not received permission from the Speaker's office yet to do that. However, we did get some amendments drafted in the interim between the subcommittee and full committee, and so I would like to have the amendments adopted today if possible. What the amendments essentially do is clarify a few issues that were pointed out at the committee hearing, at the subcommittee hearing, and that was to clarify that the 10-year date begins to toll when the person enters the diversion program as opposed to completes the diversion program. Additionally, we wanted to make it more clear that there's language in there about a similar drug or driving rehabilitation program in another jurisdiction. And what we really wanted to make clear on the record was it was a DUII-related rehabilitation program in this state or another state, either alcohol or drug, as opposed to a voluntary participation at a, you know, Betty Ford clinic was the example used that had nothing to do with driving. So we wanted to make that very clear, and that's what those amendments reflect.
Okay, any comments or questions on the amendments? I'd like to have a motion on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move the amendments be.
Representative Barker, move the dash ones into House Bill 2654. No other comments, objections? So ordered. We will not move the bill out until we get permission from the Speaker to get the subsequent referral. House Bill, open a work session on House Bill 2221.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 2221 was filed a request to the Department of Justice. It makes several changes to the operation of the Child Abuse Multidisciplinary Intervention Program, or the CAMI program. A lot of these changes were made due to the evolution of this program since it's been adopted, I think, in the early 90s. I can go through the following changes. As mentioned in my SMS, there are about six of them, if the committee would like me to. This bill passed out of the Civil Subcommittee with dash one amendments. There were some clarifying amendments, and it was unanimously passed out with a due pass recommendation.
Just a second, I was looking at one of the amendments here. Okay, committee, do you have any comments or questions regarding the amendments or the bill or what it does? Need a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2221 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Flores has moved House Bill 2221 to the floor with a due pass as amended. Any other questions, comments? Call the roll, please.
Representative Barker.
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Ward?
Aye.
Vice Chairman Person?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Aye. I'm going to move the bill to the consent calendar, and House Bill 2221, as amended, moves to the floor with a due pass. And open a work session on House Bill 2370.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 2370 requires a state medical examiner to issue a death certificate within 45 days of receiving credible information that a person is missing at sea and presumed dead. At the Civil Subcommittee, we heard testimony of different individuals that had unfortunate situations where family members were lost at sea, and the state medical examiner's office is in some ways a little more deliberate than it needs to be with these processes. So this bill was drafted to make, I guess, an exception or to kind of move these cases through a little faster where a person is missing at sea and presumed dead. There are dash two amendments that were adopted in the Civil Subcommittee, and it did pass out with a unanimous due pass recommendation.
Ms. Flores?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just amplify the Council's comment that the medical examiner's office demonstrated a little more deliberate than needs to be to the detriment of the families of those who have perished at sea.
Yeah, they really have. Representative Gerard.
Mr. Chair, there was a question at the time about a conflict with the Coast Guard's procedural filing, that it really lagged what the state medical examiner could do. I was wondering if that has been resolved in any way.
I don't recall. Do you happen to...
That issue is resolved in the dash two amendments. There's not a reference to the Coast Guard records or Coast Guard... documents as there was in the original bill. The reference is to credible evidence, so that could be Coast Guard evidence or any other type of documents. So that issue was resolved in that way.
They could use eyewitness, the other members that were maybe on the boat, the sheriff's office, Marine Board that investigated those other sources, newspaper articles, things of that nature.
Okay.
It's a good bill.
Thank you.
I'd like to have a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2370 as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Reverend McPherson has moved House Bill 2370 to the floor as amended with a do-pass recommendation. Any other comments, objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher? Representative Ward?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. House Bill 2370 as amended has been moved to the floor with a do-pass recommendation, and Representative Brown and myself will be dual carriers. Open a work session on House Bill 2499.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 2499 removes the requirement that children attending high school must maintain a C average or better to continue receiving child support. A couple quick comments on this bill. Oregon is somewhat unique in its child support statutes in that it requires spouses to pay child support for children who are post-high school, over 18 and attending school. Therefore, they require certain, there are certain requirements of these children. One is that they maintain a C average or better, so these children aren't just going to college and goofing around or partying or whatever. And so this is one of those requirements. This bill, it affects children who are 18 to 21. Some children attending high school are still 18, so this bill covers children who are still in high school. The purpose of this bill is to make sure that parents giving child support are still have to give child support to kids who are in high school, and that these requirements are applying to kids who are post-high school schooling.
Questions or comments on the bill? Have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2499 to the floor with the do-pass.
Representative Barker has moved House Bill 2499 to the floor with the do-pass recommendation. Any questions or objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Ward?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. House Bill 2499 moves the floor with the do-pass recommendation, and let's notify Representative Schaffer that he should carry it. And open a work session on House Bill 2545.
Chairman, may I make a statement? I'm going to ask that this be taken off today's agenda, but I want to make a short statement for the record.
That's fine.
We convened a work group, and it was well attended by public bodies, Department of Administrative Services, Department of Justice, Tom Gallagher on behalf of the media, and a few others present. It was determined that the language which you see before you was available in the model rules of the Attorney General's office, and this language is in use now, and I felt that that was probably the best resolution of this problem. Thereafter, a couple of issues arose. Representative McPherson raised a question about the language on line 4 as to what the parameters of the law mean. I tried to run that back through the Department of Justice and found out that it really has no meaning, so we wanted to take that out. Subsequently, I was contacted by the League of Oregon Cities. This is subsequent to the work group. League of Oregon Cities, and they informed me that the Port of Portland also want to take another look at the draft. I've seen their work product, and I think we can work this out fairly quickly, but I didn't want to proceed today with an incomplete product, so I'm just asking that for those reasons it be taken on to the work session. I'll consult with these people and then bring it back.
Okay, any other questions or comments on the bill?
Thank you.
All right, we will not move the bill. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2545. Okay, open a work session on House Bill 2634.
Chair Ackerman, members of the committee, House Bill 2634 establishes pleading requirements for actions against real estate licensees. Many real estate licensees are brought into actions between buyers and sellers. Oftentimes, they are named even if they're not liable, and sometimes they settle, and it presents quite a cost for the licensees. this bill would require, add similar requirements to pleadings that are currently in statute for to bring actions against architectures, and those requirements basically require attorneys to say that they have another professional who will say what the licensee did wrong and so forth. This bill has -1 amendments that were adopted in the civil subcommittee, and it passed out unanimously.
Excuse us for a moment here. All right, are there any comments on the bill, Representative?
I have a motion.
Ackerman. Okay, got a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move that House Bill 2634, as amended, be forwarded to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Ackerman has moved House Bill 2634, as amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any comments, objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Ward?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye.
House Bill 2634 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and Representative Ackerman is the carrier.
Thank you.
We're not going to work House Bill 2938. There's some changes that we need to do here. We'll go on to House Bill 2978, open work session.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 2978 permits courts and dissolution and separation judgments to order revocation of beneficiary designations made by one spouse in favor of the other spouse on certain financial assets. Oftentimes in a dissolution, there's a problem where one spouse inadvertently forgets or does not change a beneficiary designation in a financial asset, and that will cause some problems if there's an untimely death or if that person dies and hasn't changed that designation. That asset will oftentimes go to the divorced spouse against the will or desires of the deceased spouse. This bill allows judges in these judgments to revoke these beneficiary designations.
Okay, is there any comment on the bill?
I just have the question, how do you know what the deceased intent was? I mean, how would anybody know that? If I had coworkers who got divorced who didn't change their life insurance because they wanted the woman who had and raised their kids to have something in case they died rather than the new cocktail waitress wife. And so they left it in the original wife's name.
Is that a question to me, Representative Barker, the members of the committee?
You're saying that if they accidentally leave it in somebody else's name and then we're going to give it to the new wife, how do you know? But the question is, how could you presume to know the intent of the deceased?
Is it open for discussion at this point, Mr. Chair?
It most certainly is, okay. Representative McPherson and Representative Ackerman.
This is
similar to last year.
It's an issue that there's a bit of history to, although this is a pretty, I think, toned-down version of it.
I haven't read it yet. The
law of wills has been for centuries has been that when the parties get divorced, then that automatically revokes a bequest in a will in favor of the former spouse on the sort of logical assumption that probably the act of getting divorced reflects that there's a difference in attitude about the desirability of leaving property to that former spouse. And it's because people don't get around to changing their wills, and then they die, and things that we probably never intended then happen in terms of passing their property on. And it's not an issue if they die without a will, then the law of intestate succession does not give property to a former spouse. We had a bill up in the last session of the legislature out of this committee to extend that same principle from the law of wills to retirement plan accounts and life insurance policies. And we had a divergence of view on the committee. It was a wounding experience for me because I was the carrier of that bill and it was the first one to fail on the floor of the House last session. This bill is much toned down because it does not automatically revoke the beneficiary designations of a former spouse upon divorce. Instead, it says the court has authority to order it. So that's the key difference. So I think that even though we probably disagree, Representative Barker and I, about the merits of that bill before, I think we can probably agree on this one because this doesn't automatically do it. It says the court has authority to do it.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Flores.
Mr. Chair, and in that discussion within the parameters of the court and the authority that the court would retain, there would be discussion, I would presume, between the parties and their counsel to whether or not they wanted to make that insertion into whatever document then would come out of the proceeding. So it's
right.
Very permissive and not mandatory.
Right. Very good.
Any further questions?
Put a thumbs up.
Did a good job, didn't you?
Yeah, good job, guys.
I neglected to mention there was a -1 amendment that the subcommittee adopted. That -1 amendment just corrected separation judgments were left out of the original bill, so that was included in the -1 amendment.
And just to, if I might, if you could indulge me, Mr. Chair, because this it's an issue that I focus on because of all the various problems you try to anticipate in practicing law, this is one that actually bites people. I mean, I have seen a number of live cases where people didn't change their beneficiary designations, and then something that was quite unexpected and probably quite unintended happens because we hadn't changed the law to conform to the law of wills. So, and I'd say that we ought to at least do this, and I think longer term, I think that it really is something we need to do because it saves people, families, from consequences they would never have expected.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to give us a possible scenario. What happens if the deceased had intended to leave the beneficiary as the former spouse? What kind of legal action could be taken to contest that in court?
Well, they would have to take affirmative action to redesignate, and of course they could do that. I mean, they could. It's just a question of trying to presume what their likely intent was, and they could always, as soon as they got divorced, redesignate the former spouse, and that could be part of a property settlement agreement, and often is, as a matter of fact, that there'll be a beneficiary designation of the ex-spouse that's agreed to. It's just a question of trying to decide what in most cases would people probably have intended, and if people leave, you know, a lot of people have various beneficiary designations, they don't even know where they are, what they apply to, and they don't get around to changing them, even after their life circumstances change in a significant way. Now, all this does, all this bill is, says the court has authority as part of the dissolution action to order that this revocation applies.
Okay.
Further comments, questions? Have a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2978 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
As amended?
As amended.
Okay, Representative McPherson has moved House Bill 2978 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. House Bill 2978 as amended moves the floor with a due pass recommendation. Who should I have for carrier? Do you want to carry it, Representative Flores? You did from the sub, or do you want one of our people with expertise legally to do so? Either way.
It is your call, Mr. Chair. I'd be delighted to carry it, but if it's Mr. McPherson's
pass, No, actually, I think it'd be, I would a little bit prefer the Representative Flores.
History. Oh, I get it.
Yes. Break the curse here.
Of course, you'll stand and jump in.
I will be prepared.
I think the chair has an excellent opportunity here, Representative McPherson. Representative Flores will be the carrier. Thank you. Work session on House Bill 2983.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 2983 lowers the age of persons whom special rates or services are permitted under the law that prohibits discrimination based on age by place of public accommodation from 55 to 50. Basically, what this bill does is allow businesses to offer senior citizen discounts and other special services to people who are 50 as opposed to 55 without violating anti-discrimination laws.
Didn't know that 50 was a senior.
That happens. take that out of the record. Discounts and other special services.
That happened to me 15 years ago.
Make those not on my face.
Anybody want to make a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill. This I hate this. Move House Bill 2983 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Representative Flores has moved House Bill 2983 to the floor with a do pass recommendation, and that would go on the consent calendar. Any further questions, debate, objections? Call the roll.
Representative
Ackerman? Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Farrar?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. House Bill 2983 moves to the floor with a do pass and will be on the consent calendar. Open a work session on House Bill 2995.
House Bill 2995 has a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee. It wasn't heard in the Civil Subcommittee. It's my understanding the purposes of this work session is to forward this bill to the Revenue Committee.
Any comments? Need a motion?
A motion to move it to Revenue then?
Yeah, move it.
All right, I'll move that House Bill 2995 be referred to the Revenue Committee, House Revenue Committee.
Okay, Representative Ackerman has moved that House Bill 2995 be referred to the Revenue Committee. Any questions, objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Ferrari?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher? Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. House Bill 2995 moves with a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee. Open a work session on House Bill 3119.
Chair Krieger, members of the committee, House Bill 3119 is a relatively simple bill. It allows county clerks to keep records on computer databases as opposed to microfilm.
Representative Ackerman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move that House Bill 3157 be forwarded to the House.
3119.
I'm sorry.
Unless I did something wrong.
No, that's correct. I'm on the wrong page, obviously. House Bill 3119 be forwarded to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Ackerman has moved House Bill 3119 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any questions, comments, objections? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Worth?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye. House Bill 3119 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Garrard, I think you were the carrier in the sub.
Be happy to, Mr. Chair.
Open a work session on House Bill 3157.
Chair Krieger and members of the committee, House Bill 3157 provides the duty of county courts or boards of county commissioners to inspect local correctional facilities is discretionary for facilities not operated by the county. Currently, county commissioners have to go out to any correctional facility within their jurisdiction or district and physically inspect correctional facilities, even if they're run by the city or some other entity. This bill makes those inspections discretionary. The county commissioners are still mandated that they physically inspect correctional facilities that they operate. There were dash one amendments adopted in the civil subcommittee, merely clarifying amendments, and it was passed out with unanimous consent.
Have a motion on the bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will move that House Bill 3157 as amended be forwarded to the House floor if you pass recommendation. I have a small comment before the vote.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and make the repeat your motion, and then we can have the comment on and the question. Okay, Representative Ackerman has moved House Bill 3157 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Garrard, did you have a question or statement?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I gave a courtesy vote in the subcommittee on this. I will be voting no.
Okay, thank you. Representative Ackerman, did you
Just briefly, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, there should be in your file a letter dated today from Anthony Beatty on behalf of the Lane County, raising points in support of the bill. I won't repeat all of them except to note that the intent of the bill is to make it discretionary rather than mandatory for county commissioners to inspect jails that they don't own or operate. As noted in the letter, grand juries now have that function, and certainly the local entities have that responsibility. An additional point that was called to my attention after testimony in the subcommittee was a liability issue, and that is if a county is mandated to inspect facilities it does not own or operate and does not do so or does that job inadequately, it may give rise to their liability over conditions which over facilities which they don't own or operate. So it's a time savings matter for the county commissioners, and also tends to limit their liability if they don't have this mandatory duty. So that would be my comment for the record.
All right. Thank you. Any further comments?
Sure. I have one question I wasn't able to find the answer to with the lobbyists. But are we currently, under the current law, is there a requirement that federal facilities be toured or inspected?
I don't know. I would really doubt whether a local entity would have control over a federal correctional facility under any circumstances.
Follow up. Well, are they currently treated as non-county jail facilities? If it's in a county, say Yamhill County, the Sheridan Federal Prison, is that required? Is there a requirement by the county Board of Commissioners to inspect that now as a non-county jail facility?
Their inspection duties now are, of course, to their own facilities, which they own and operate, and also mandatorily to local facilities, which are not federal facilities, as I understand the law.
Okay.
Further?
So, for example, they would have the authority to mandatorily have to inspect a city jail.
Right.
Okay. Can I have a motion on the bill? I guess we have the motion.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I will move that House Bill 3157 as amended be forwarded to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, I'll repeat it again. I think we already did, but House Bill, Representative Ackerman moves House Bill 3157 to the floor with a due pass, and we've heard the objection from Representative Garrard. Anything further? Call the roll, please.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Barker?
Aye.
Representative Flores?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
No.
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Work?
Aye.
Vice Chair McPherson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Chair Krieger?
Aye.
House Bill 3157 as amended moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. And Representative Ackerman, would you carry, please?
I will. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Representative
Pierce. I move that we suspend the rules so that we can allow Representative Worth, who had not joined us yet when we voted on the concurrent resolution 11 honoring Robert Coons, to cast a vote on that measure.
Representative Ackerman has moved that we suspend the rules and allow Representative Worth to vote on HCR 11. Any objection? Seeing none. Representative Worth, how do you vote?
As a co-sponsor of the resolution, I vote aye.
He votes aye. Now we're going to a possible draft request. Would you explain to us, Mr. Sears, what our situation is, please?
There's been a draft request by Mr. Brant Wolf. It's we're 50 days past the filing deadline, so in order to have LC draft a bill, it needs to have, I guess, permission from the Speaker's office, and then it needs to go through and be voted out of a committee in order to draft that bill. From that point, it would go through the regular procedure where it would come to, I think, back to this committee where we would again vote on it once it's drafted. Have this a measure introduction.
Yeah, this is a drafting request. We simply need a motion from the committee, as a committee, to allow the draft of the bill. I don't even know what the bill is. But this is another one of the things that when it does come back, you have, if it comes in as a committee bill, which it would, you would not be obligated to vote for it in the subcommittee or in the full or on the floor. It's just to get it into the process.
Mr. Chair, the letter that we have here to Brant Wolf from an attorney's office, Duncan Tiger and Nigel, pertains to publishers' liability for advertisements. Is that in the context of the requested bill draft?
Yes, I believe that's what it is.
I actually don't have that letter. Mr. Wolf is here if the committee has questions regarding this.
Let's have Mr. Wolf come up for just a moment. Is he here?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brant Wolf, and I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association, and I can run through the request or answer a question, whichever you prefer. I know I'm 50 days late and a dollar short.
You're 50 days late, but I think, would you explain what we think may have happened? We're not certain if the bill request that was in originally, if it was misplaced by someone here in LC or where, but it kind of disappeared. But it had been, an effort had been made to get it in the process on time.
Well, actually, no. This issue came up after the
All
session
right.
convened.
I was misinformed.
Well, yeah, as you may or may not recall, I visited with you.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure of the process myself. I had never done that before, and it was my understanding I had to get your permission and the Speaker's permission. So we did all that. And then it turns out there's one more step, which is the committee has to give its permission as well. And that's kind of where we are right now. I've gotten the other two steps taken care of, but this is the last step. So that's where we are in the process.
Okay, I'd like to have a motion then.
Mr. Chair, I would move that the request for bill draft be approved.
Okay. Representative Flores has moved that we accept the request for a bill draft as a committee. Any other discussion, objections? If not, stand so ordered.
Thank you very much.
Have we got anything? Okay. I believe we're done for the day. I appreciate you being here. With that many bills, we're about a minute and a half late, so that's not too bad. We're recessed. Thank you.